From Hologram Radio, this is Covered, a conversation about books with the people who write them. I'm your host, Harry Marks, and today's guest is a nonfiction author, novelist, and the creator of one of the most popular destinations for writers with little time, the 10-Minute Novelist Facebook group. Her new book, When the Timer Dings, Organizing Your Life to Make the Most of 10-Minute Increments, is all about getting your life and the people in it on the same page so you can accomplish your goals in 10 minutes at a time. Please welcome Catherine Grubb to the show.
Thanks, Harry. Really glad to be here.
Excellent. So, the prequel to When the Timer Dings, titled Write a Novel in 10 Minutes a Day, is all about using the spare minutes we have during our day to squeeze out a full-length work of fiction. It's also the guiding philosophy behind the Facebook group. So I'm wondering, what compelled you to write When the Timer Dings as a follow-up?
Well, a lot of first of all, the reason that I have to write in 10-minute increments is because I have 5 children. And I decided that when my youngest was about 4 or 5 months old, that I was 38. I figured my baby-making days were behind me, and it's time to really pursue those other dreams I had besides a big family. Sorry. And how is this going to happen? And so the reason I wrote the book was because I really believed that the time was now, not when they get out of the house. So that, well, if I have really low goals, small goals and really small expectations, then this is doable. And I figured it out. After 5 years, it took me in 10-minute increments to write my first book, and I got the contract and everything. But the truth is, I couldn't really have those 10-minute increments without getting the rest of my life in order. It's not so much what you do at your laptop or your desktop for 10 minutes. It's what you do away from it that makes the biggest difference. So if you're more efficient when you're taking care of your kids or you're running your household or you're shopping or whatever it is you're doing, then it makes you have more 10-minute increments to do the things you love. So this book is mostly about that, about the other side of the coin.
So it's interesting that you say that, because throughout the book you call it a sequel to your first book, Write a Novel in 10 Minutes a Day, but to me it felt more like a prequel. It felt like the primer, like you needed to get your life in order before you decided to tackle a novel in 10 minutes a day. Would you agree?
I would agree. And it just happens that this is the way it worked out in publishing. It isn't really necessarily. This book, When the Timer Dings, is I've self-published it, where the other book was contracted. And so when somebody's going to hand you a check, you go with them first.
Right.
And so I was, and it was the launching point for this. And as I developed my Facebook group and I was learning, meeting more and more writers like me who were time crunched, a lot of the big question was, I know what to do when I write. What I don't know what to do is when I get up. And when I don't know how to make my life more orderly. I don't know how to, get my family in on it, or keep myself organized, or keep my brain on track, or those type of things. And so I saw the need in the conversations I was having. I thought, well, I can come up with some practical ways to make this work. And I come from a point of view of a stay-at-home mom, which, is an entirely different point of view from someone who has a 9-to-5 job or is a student or something like that. So, but we do all have to eat and we all have to sleep. And so I try to make allowances for our differences.
Yeah, time is a huge part of both books, and the 10-minute increment part in particular. But you have this passage in the book where you say, "The idea of finding a sense of purpose first is not mine. In nearly every book I used for research, I found that the experts in time management all agree that it's not time nor lack of time that's the problem. It's a misalignment of priorities or a misunderstanding of what matters. It could be a lack of depth on the part of the doer, a lack of inner character, or a neglect to pursue inner goals that really matter." And we hear this kind of talk from people all the time who say, "Oh, you write novels? I wish I had time to write a book," as though those of us who do just have all the time in the world to do this, and it's just something we sort of, do haphazardly. What do you say to those people who flippantly write off the fact that you write?
I would say, if you really, really want something, then you're going to make the time for it. A lot of times I just kind of like, acknowledge those people who say that, because they really don't mean what they say. Because, I've met a lot of writers over the 10 years that I've been calling myself a writer. And they, you can almost put them into two groups: people who are really serious about this, people who aren't. And so if you're really serious, you can do anything. You know, it takes commitment and it takes focus and it takes some sort of organization, but you could do it if you really wanted to. And like, if I only had, you know, I'd do that if I had the time. I'm like, maybe you would, maybe you wouldn't. You know, it's kind of, you make the time for what matters to you. And I think that's the question you're alluding to here. What really matters? And we can't really decide that for anybody but ourselves. And so I don't want to, and that was one of the reasons that motivated me when I had a bunch of little kids in the house, was I didn't want to waste my time. I didn't want to let the time go by in 10, 15 years and not take advantage of these little things that I had in little pockets of time I had in front of me. And I wanted to see my kid. I wanted my kids to see me pursuing these dreams, even when it looked like it was futile or it looked like it was a waste of time or it didn't feel like I was accomplishing anything at all. And so, and now my kids are much bigger and they're much more independent and I have theoretically more time because they can make their own lunch and they can, you know, they can do the laundry. They're self-sufficient. And so I have theoretically more time, but I'm finding even now I have to drive kids to work or I have to take people to the doctor or I have to take somebody back to college or I have to get on the phone and, you know, to do the blah, blah, blah. So it's a different shift of my attention to them. And I'm still going back to those same habits that I had when they were babies. Like, okay, 10 minutes here. In fact, right before we were on together, I was in my office and I only had about 20 minutes. Like, well, I can do something. Something is better than nothing. And I'm serious about this. And so I'm going to spend my time working on this project. And I could waste it on Pinterest, sure. Or I could do something that really matters to me. And I've decided that this matters.
So I have to ask, because I'm sure it's a question other people have listening to this. You write in 10-minute increments or you know, more or less, but you write 10 minutes at a time. How long did it take you to write your first novel if you were writing it at 10 minutes at a time?
It was about 5 years.
Okay.
It was a messy 5 years. I didn't know how to write a novel in the first place, much less do it. And, you know, so I was kind of like going all over the place with it. I really didn't know. I just knew that every day I wanted to move forward. And so maybe that meant editing or maybe it meant rewriting the same opening chapter 25 times and then winding up that you didn't like it anyway and just leave it out. You know, I was kind of learning as I went. And so, and it's a great way to learn. And so even the steps that I describe and write a novel in 10 minutes a day, I didn't follow those steps because I didn't know that they were steps to follow. So it kind of made it up. So it took me 5 years. But then been other projects that have taken me much less time because I was able to understand the process better, or I worked on my own home efficiency better. And so I'm still figuring it out, you know.
We're all in that situation when we first start writing. The first book I wrote was a complete mess, a disaster. I don't know why I ever bothered querying it in the first place, but it was the thing you have to do to get to the next part. To, you know, I didn't have 10-minute novelists at the time. I didn't the Facebook group. I didn't have my network of writer friends online and in person that I could rely on as beta readers or just for general advice. It was very much fly by the seat of your pants and see what happens. And once you finished the first novel, how did you get past it? How did you grow into writing the second one, maybe a little more efficiently, with a little more knowledge of structure and beats in a story and things like that? How did you progress?
The next one, I can't honestly say, I don't think I understood story any better because the next one was kind of an exception. And I got the idea on a Friday afternoon. And by the time the weekend was over, I probably had 10,000 words in it. It hit me like a lightning bolt. And I hated it when authors would say, oh, it was like the main character walked into my house and sat down and told me the story. Because I thought, oh, that's just stupid. That way. It's supposed to be a battle. But that's what happened in my second book. I really felt like the whole thing was fully formed in the course of a weekend, beginning, middle, and end. And I spent I knew it in my head and I could not type fast enough to get it down. And in that six-week period where I couldn't sleep, I really took over my my whole body, my mind, I couldn't really get through a meal with my family without thinking about it. It was always on my computer. I couldn't go to sleep because I couldn't get my mind to settle down. My children to this day mourn that, like, you made us make our own lunch. It was just awful, you know, because I really couldn't focus on anything else with this book. I had 60,000 words at the end of 6 weeks. I don't know how that, so I can't say, 10 minutes a day worked. No, it didn't. Not in that case. So it was it's my most popular novel of all of them. I've written three. It's sold the best. It's had accolades that were unbelievable out of the blue. Like, I was a quarter finalist for the Amazon Breakthrough Novel Award with it. I was contacted. It's an independent self-published book. And I was contacted by Catholic Digest. That's like, we want to feature this book in our Christmas issue. I can't recreate that. It was an anomaly creatively.
And I think that says something about the book and just the fact that it was so exciting to you to write that carried through to the reader as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have any explanation for it. It would be really nice if I could recreate the success of that, but I wouldn't know where to start, and I'm kind of afraid of it now. So I'm like, ooh. So yeah, the success of that book, I really think, had some sort of connection with me getting the contract for write a novel in 10 minutes a day. So I'm beginning to understand that I'm a big fan of Elizabeth Gilbert's idea of the muse coming and going and giving us ideas and all of it kind of flowing together, and that we're just receptacles of this story. I really appreciate that. I feel like it kind of takes the pressure off a little bit. And so I feel like that the books kind of work together to, like, keep me moving in my career. And so here, 10 minutes, write a novel in 10 minutes a day, connected with the Facebook group. And then the Facebook group connects to this. And I just kind of sit back and enjoy the ride, you know? So, yeah, okay.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the Facebook group, because it's such a big part of everything. And I'm a member of the group, and I participate in the discussions sometimes. And I'm more of a lurker. I'm very interested in seeing, you know, what other people are talking about. But how did the group come about? What compelled you to start the Facebook group in the first place?
Well, I was drafting Write a Novel in 10 Minutes a Day. And I started in January of 2014. And independently, two friends of mine, one a real life friend and one an online friend, Brian Duxbury, who lives in the UK, is an online friend, and Billy Jouse, who lived in Florida, is a real life friend. And they separately contacted me the previous fall and said, we want to write a novel, and can you help us? Can you coach us? And it's like, okay, well, did you guys know I'm also having to draft this book, write a novel in 10 minutes a day? And so they were like, hey, how about I write a chapter? And then I email it to you guys, and you do the exercises in the fiction you're working in, and you give me feedback. And we kind of make it this little triad of working together. You guys are blessed, and I'm blessed, and we kind of finish our projects. And they were love the idea. And so from January to July, I sent out an email to them once a week, and it was the next chapter. And they were supposed to do their homework, and they would discuss it, and I'd clarify this and work on this and iron out that, and all the way through the whole book. But about March of that year, my husband and I were watching this show on Netflix at the time called The Pitch. And my husband has worked for advertising agencies and marketing, and we know a lot about that. And the idea of the show is that two competing marketing companies sit down with one client, and they compete to win the account by various pitches and how they're going to implement social media and blah, blah, blah. So I would just watch it, and then my husband and I would discuss it. And I just kept thinking, well, why aren't I pitching? Why don't I create some sort of something for my book? And then one of the big buzzwords in this show was community. You need a community. You need a group of people around a product. And I instantly remembered the I'm a Pepper, You're a Pepper commercials from my childhood in the 70s. Like, oh, that's what they mean. Some sort of identity with some sort of product. Well, why couldn't, and I'd always call myself 10 Minute Writer, and my blog was called The 10 Minute Writer. So why couldn't we be 10 Minute Novelists? okay, you know, that would work. That's the identity. And everywhere I met and went, people ask me, well, how do I run a novel in 10 minutes a day? And I go, well, you set your timer. That's how you do it. And so it's kind of like, I didn't think it would take much to get people to identify with this. So I just started a Facebook group and like emailed all my friends and said, hey, would you join this? Because I'm going to work on this, hoping it would help launch the write a novel in 10 minutes a day. I don't even know what to expect. That was also on a Friday. And by Sunday, I had over 100 members. And I thought, well, okay, now what do I do with them? Like, they're here. They expect something from me. Well, we need exercises, or we need constant encouragement, or we need practical help. And so then it became a Twitter chat once a week. And I just pigtailed off for somebody else's Twitter chats. Like, okay, you guys are done at 9. We're starting at 9, you know, kind of a... See what that came in. And it just kind of like flowed together. And I didn't really know what I was doing. Nobody said, oh, this is the manual for running a Facebook group. I just kind of guessed. And I was myself, which is, I like to be really goofy. And I said, well, if they don't like me exactly where I am, then they don't need to be around here. And I also knew I had to have some sort of order. And, you know, if anything has taught me about leadership, it's having a family of 5 children. I know how to get people to pay attention to me. And this is how it's going to be. And if you don't like it, there's the door. You know, so I'm not afraid to get people mad at me because I've got 4.5 teenagers now. So, and then I started getting people, some of the active members approached me and said, you know, you can't run this show by yourself. You need help. And so then we started, I think, oh, I probably do. And so I just start tabbing people to be admins and help me with moderating the threads. And then it was, you know, some subgroup ideas and, hey, what if we do this? And, hey, if we do that? And now I've got a staff of over 20 people helping me in various capacities. And it's all volunteer. And we are planning a conference in Cincinnati this next August because we want to have a live event, which... is a little intimidating.
I can imagine. It's
but
incredible.
We got Donald Mass and Janice Hardy and James Scott Bell to agree to come and speak. Yeah. So we're like, okay, because we made a list, our staff made a list of people that are dream team. Like, who would we, if you could have anybody speak, who would it be? And thinking, we'll just go down the list until we get 3 yeses. And so we sent out some emails. Sandy Stuckless is my guy in charge of that. And he came in, he's like, hey, our top 3 all said yes. Like, oh, okay. Like, oh. And so that, you know, it's all been so much more successful than I ever imagined. And it has blown me away. And one of the biggest joys of the group is watching how I meet my staff, watching my staff thrive in the things that they're really good at. Jessica White runs our 365 club, and she's fantastic. And she organizes all these people with the goal of writing 1,000 words a day. And this is her 3rd or 4th year running this. And she has this spreadsheet that is unbelievable. It's like a work of art. It's complicated and color-coded and unbelievable so that everybody in the club can track their progress year for an entire year. And I just let her run the show, and she's got her own staff of volunteers that encourage people. And we had a NaNoWriMo subgroup, and we've had a group for, moving right along is about physical fitness, kind of keeping the connection between mind and body, and how you don't want to be a sedentary slob as a writer. That's kind of come and, you know, trying to do that. And we have chats going all the time, and we've got fun things we do every day. Somebody's always in charge of the new question of the day. I ask for help. I say, hey guys, what if we do this? Who wants to do it? And then somebody will raise their hand and say, I'll do that. And then they take it off with it. And it's so amazing. And I like, oh, I had no idea that they were so talented in that area. Like Jennifer Worrell's helping run out of our sponsorship and organizing our conference. And she's amazingly talented. And we could not run this conference without her. And I just sit back and I'm amazed at this. And then if I have a problem with something and I can privately ask one of the staff members, like, hey, Joanna lives in Arizona. What do you think of this? And she'll give me insight on behavior of people online that I would have no clue I just know she's the person to ask about what they're really saying. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, now we need to do this, this, this. And it's just been, and it's come to where my group, my staff has become really close friends, and I just adore them. And I don't feel like it's just me running a group. I feel like it's, this is, these are my best friends, and we really love each other, and we really care for each other. And even if the whole conference is disappointing, we'll get to hang out together for a weekend and like just hug and squeal and, ah, it's you, you know, it's going to be, it's a real joy. It's a joy to work with these people and then see how we're encouraging writers, new and emerging writers mostly, to find practical ways to meet their dreams. Because, and we get stories all the time of people who have gotten out of a sense of discouragement and failure and moved into some successes just because they listened to our encouragement, or they found a community, or they got a good feedback from their beta reader or something to do with our group. And I'm blown away by it. I just sit back and watch in amazement how it worked. And oh, wow. This is fully true, and I will not save saying this. Outside of my own children, I've never done anything that is more satisfying than creating this group. And I don't even think writing, publishing the next book is as fulfilling as is watching the people shine.
Today's episode is brought to you by Nocht Sound Engineering. Nocht helps you record, edit, and produce great podcasts, streamlining the process so you can deliver high-quality shows to your audience. Whether you just need to trim the ums and you knows, or you're looking to set up the perfect recording rig, Nocht has it all covered. Speaking of, Nocht makes every episode of this podcast sound terrific. Consider this more than just an advertisement, consider it an endorsement. So if you're looking to bring your podcast to the next level, contact Nocht Sound Engineering today at nochtsound.com. That's nachtsound.com. Nocht, more than a stack of tracks. You've built an incredible community in this Facebook group. And part of the reason I can imagine is that you run a very tight ship. You have an admin staff that is on top of things. And, you know, if someone... I would have thought running a Facebook group as strictly, it's not the exact word I want to use, but it's the most, I guess, appropriate one, is you guys run a tight ship, a very strict ship, and, you know, you have specific days for specific topics, like, you know, Tuesday is buddy day. If you're looking for a critique partner or a beta reader, that's when you ask for one. Or Wednesday is author happiness, post your sales links or you know, something great that happened to you so you don't clog up the feed. And I would think doing it that way might stifle things and give people, it would discourage them from participating. But what you've done is create a group for people where they don't have to wade into a cesspool of sales links and buy my book and, you know, look at this amazing stuff for sale and all this stuff. You've given people a way to share the good, share the bad, ask questions in a very tight, cohesive, easy to just walk in and participate kind of way. And how did you get to that point? Did you go in with that idea of I want it to be this way? Or had you been sort of feeling your way through the whole time and your staff sort of, you know, wrangled everything together with you? How did you get to the point where it is now?
When I started the group and I was by myself running it, there were a couple of things I knew I didn't want. I knew I didn't want a bunch of commercials, because that if you meet a writer, if you meet an author, then the chances of them having something for sale is pretty good.
Right. And most open Facebook groups are that. Most open Facebook groups are just, and I've left so many of them.
Right. And so it's like, well, everybody has something to sell, right? And it's not that there's not a place to sell it. We're just going to make sure that it's a place for it. And maybe I learned this when I was, raising my own kids. You don't say no. You just say, here. This is the limitation in which you can do, the context in which you can do this. And so I was setting it up, and Rachel Thompson, who's a social media expert, had created the Monday Blogs hashtag. So I thought, well, that makes sense. The way she did it, everybody knows Monday Blogs, you share blogs on Monday. Maybe you don't get as much, you might get more traffic. And I knew I was getting more traffic on Mondays because I participated. Well, it makes sense. Well, if you did blogs on Monday, then why can't you repeat that other places? And also, if you have a daily thing, it gives people a reason to come back. And so they understand, oh, this is what happens. And I think author happiness was the next one. Author happiness was something I've been trying to do on Twitter for years, and it never took, you know, never worked. And I was like, oh, but it's fun. You know, author happiness can be anything. It can be, I wrote 200 words today, you know? Or it can be, I'm a number one bestseller on Amazon. You know, I got a Pushcart nomination. You know, those are big deals, but we should all be celebrating our accomplishments instead of it being a place. If we don't have the author happiness, then it becomes kind of nasty. Everybody's like, you know, oh, well, you can always find somebody better than you or more successful than you, or you who kind of lords their success in their face. But when it's author happiness, we all get to celebrate.
Right. And it's nice having it in that one day too, because it doesn't it doesn't clog up the feed with not just the sales stuff, but oh, I got this published, or you know, oh, someone left a 5-star review. It becomes a lot.
It becomes a lot, and people look forward to sharing. And it there for a while it was, you can share anything, but you can only share links on Wednesdays. And now it's just beginning, like, I've got good news. I got good news last Thursday, but I waited until Wednesday to share it. And like, okay, you know, sure, go ahead. But people are learning that now. And I, you know, in the perfect world, I would go down the thread every week and I'd like everybody's thing and say, oh, good job, or we're so proud of you. I don't always get enough time to do that. But it's just a place to say I accomplished. And I just feel like it's really, really important for us. This is a lonely, lonely profession we've chosen. And it's really easy to get bogged down in our failures and in the rejection slips and in the lack of confidence and the comparing ourselves with others. And even if just for a little bit, you have a chance to say, there was a small victory here and everybody gets to celebrate with me. You know, I know it's important to me. So I wanted to have an importance for that. And then as those two came along, it made more sense to fill them in. Like, oh, well, somebody did ask for, I need help with this thing. Where do I get help here? Like, well, it made sense. Oh, let's just make a buddy day and figure that out. And, you know, it just, it worked. And there for a while, we had our Twitter chat on Thursday nights. And so Thursday was going to be Twitter chat day, but I kind of got burned out. I need to step out from that for a while. And so, you know, we try to use those days as just a container. And I know that my motherhood skills have taught me everything is in its place and everybody knows where it goes. So, you know, I hope it's a place that we don't find. We do get, sometimes we push back and it's like, you know, it shouldn't be like, you know, why do I have to follow the rules, or, you know, why doesn't it be this way? Or sometimes we get, you know, people get offended if we don't handle it with gentleness and we're doing the best we can. We're not perfect. We're going to make mistakes, and we will encourage people to read and understand the rules, but also not be afraid to be corrected, because we all do make mistakes. And it's personal. It's just, hey, can you just put the link over here? So,
I'd like to jump back to the book for a little bit.
Sure.
And talk to you about, because you were talking about, you know, your time management and, you know, everything in its place. You say in the book, this is more than a time management book. I believe it is a confidence management book. What do you mean by that?
Well, I know that when I feel like I'm out of control in my household, that if I know, okay, I've made decisions, I find a lot of comfort in the order. Okay. What needs to be done this day? Yesterday in my household, there was very little to eat. And I've got 4.5 teenagers. And so they all seem to think they must be fed round the clock. And so I can, with confidence, instead of panicking and saying, I'm like, okay, well, Thursday is shopping day. You guys can wait till Thursday. We're going to run out of margarine for our toast. You know what? We're getting more on Thursday. You can make do with what we've got. The confidence comes in the planning and the order and the understanding of how everything kind of works together in your life.
Okay. So knowing what's coming allows you to focus.
Right. I know what's coming. I know how I'm going to use my time. I know what my mornings look like. I know what my afternoons look like. I know how to handle in a case of an emergency. And we had an emergency over Christmas. My almost 12-year-old daughter fell down the stairs on Christmas Eve and broke her leg. And so that kind of, you know, I wish I could tell you that I handled that really well. I don't think I did. And it was Christmas Eve. It was a big deal. And I already felt like our plans for the Christmas day were messed up as a result of that. And so we had to, you know, okay, what's the best thing? And then we slip back into, instead of holiday mode, you're slipping back now into survival mode. What does it look like? How is she going to sleep tonight? You know, who's going to, we've got 4 flights of stairs in our house. How is she going to get to her room on the top floor? You know, all these little things. And it was easier because everything was so orderly to face that crisis. And she's fine. She's hopping around on crutches like she's born that way. I mean, she's doing fine. But at the time, it was kind of a big deal. And so I just feel like the more orderly you are, the more planned out you are, the more organized you are in your attitudes, you understand why you're doing the things you're doing, the more you've communicated with your family or your team on why you're doing the things you're doing, the more your stuff is organized, people with less stuff have less to be concerned about. And I'm a big advocate for keeping a simple household.
Yeah, you do talk a lot about simplicity and even minimalism to a point, you know, getting rid of things you don't need. You quoted one of my favorite books, the Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. Yeah.
Yes, for about 13 years, my family of 7 and I lived in 750 square feet. And nothing has shaped me more about living simply than that season in my life. And I didn't like it. And I grumbled about it for 13 years. But I also learned there's a lot of things that I'm so glad that I learned in that. And if, you know, my children learned how to have very few toys because there wasn't room for them. We learned how to have few clothes because we had to have room for other things. And we learned, like, there's just not a lot of room for, you know, doodads and paraphernalia on their shelves. Everything is very utilitarian. And it was pretty and it was homey, but it was tight. And so when you brought something home, you had to really think carefully, how badly do you want this? And is it going to really meet your family's needs? And I just feel like that season of having less was good because I had less to worry about. And as a result, I was free to do more for my family and for my own passions. And even now we live in a spacious 1700 square foot townhouse for the 7 of us. And we've spread out. And but even to this day, I'm like, you know, we've got too much. We've got too much junk here and too much here. And we'll simplify things. And because I really think there's a connection between our mental stress and our productivity when we have more. Too much. And it's right. One of those things we really can't decide. Anybody decide for ourselves. You know, you decide what was best for you, but if you can get rid of it, get rid of it. And anyway, that's, I don't remember the original question, but simplicity allows maximum productivity. And it focuses more on relationships than it is on just stuff.
You have a passage here where, because I do want to talk more about, you know, that you're doing this, you're following your passions in these 10-minute increments because there's other stuff that has to get done. You're a parent, you've got 5 kids, you know, there's so much to do. And you have this passage here where you say, you may be most satisfied with your day when there is a match between what you value and how you spent your time. On the other hand, when what you actually work on and accomplish during the day is mostly different from what really matters to you, you feel unfulfilled. Not because you didn't get much done, in many cases you have, but because the things you were getting done weren't the things that you value. I don't value doing the dishes or raking leaves, but they need to get done. And once they are, I'm too tired to tackle the things that are valuable to me. So I'm wondering, how do I reconcile what has to get done with what I'd like to do?
That is a really tough question. I have to fight that battle almost constantly. And because I have a lot on my plate, and you know, it's a daily thing. And I often, my personal, go back to my personal values, you kind of have to, if you really don't know who you are and what you stand for, it's really hard to make that call right every time. And if you, there are writers out there who have families, but they've elevated their writing so high up that they will sacrifice important parts of their family life or the tidiness of their home or whatever for the sake of writing. And that's what they value. And there, you could say, oh yeah, but they're probably, you know, famous, or they've got this award, or they've got this best-selling novel. Yeah, maybe. But it's a tough thing. Have they really made the right choices? Yet for their art, what right now is more important? Is it art or is it tininess? You need your leaves raked. You know, you need your dishes washed. Our family can't function under the dishes. We have just enough dishes for us, so we have to wash the dishes. We've learned how to do it fast, you know, so that we're maximizing our time. And it's a really hard question. I hope I'm explaining the difficulty this well. You know, there's plenty of times I get frustrated that I didn't get even that 10 minutes in. This week, my college age daughter is home from school and she's got a sty in her eye. And she went to see a doctor on campus at Thanksgiving, and they gave her medicine, and it still hasn't gone away. So she's home for Christmas. She needs it. And I'm like, well, while you're here, we're going to take care of it. Okay. So we went to the pediatrician, and the pediatrician said, well, we can do this, but you really need to see an ophthalmologist. Oh, here's the address for the ophthalmologist a half hour away. They can see you right now. Okay. So I get her in the car, and we drive to the ophthalmologist, and we're there for over an hour. And it's like that, my whole day is shot. Everything I planned, I was thinking this would be a quick visit with the pediatrician. They're giving us the antibiotic. We go home, done. No, it's not. So I come home at 12:30 instead of coming home at 10, like anticipated. And I'd, oh, man, I had a lot to do today. And my list is out the window. And I was like, well, but what do I value? Well, I value my kid being healthy. And I can't necessarily trust her to make the right choice while she's out of my house. So that, I value that. And I did like, I have to trust that everything's going to work out anyway. And even if I may have missed a deadline, or like a personal deadline, or I didn't supervise my other children because I missed their homeschool lesson. Like they didn't do chemistry that day. You know, I have to trust the results are okay. It's all going to work out somehow. I did the right thing by caring for my daughter. And so I just kind of, that's where my own personal values come in. My life is so much bigger than my writing, and it's so much bigger than even the tasks that are in front of me on a daily basis. I have to trust that in the long term, it's all going to work out. And I'm not going to, I let go, but it's really not that big a deal to miss that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do you ever feel guilty that whatever had gone on during the day took you away from your writing, that you didn't get the words down as you would hope to?
Yeah. And I don't feel guilty. I don't think that's the right word necessarily. Maybe a little disappointed.
I feel like guilt is a big issue with writers. I know I feel guilty when, you know, maybe I spent a little too much time on the internet or on Twitter or something, or, you know, something got in the way and I didn't get to write for that time during the day. But at the same time, I know I and many other writers will spend hours on Wikipedia in a rat hole and not write, but that's fine. We'll justify it in some other way. So, you know, I still do feel guilty sometimes when I don't get the words on the page as I had hoped. And, you know, some of it's my doing. Some of it is just life happening.
Right. Well, you can't really help life happening, especially if you're a parent. You have to just let it go. But the things like the rat holes, that's where your timer really, see, I know I'm easily distracted and I know my weaknesses. And so I know if I'm not careful, I will get distracted easily. So that's why I've learned, you know, hey, my timer is my friend here. And I can allow myself to go to Wikipedia, but I'm only going to look over 10 minutes. Or I'm going to, you know, find something relaxing and fun to do, but I'm only going to let myself do it for a short time. And then I'll get back to what I'm doing. And also there's this whole idea of something is better than nothing at all. And maybe I'm, if we start looking at our expectations in big chunks, if I was like, oh, I really wanted to write for 2 hours today. Well, you know, maybe that's not realistic. Your expectations are too high. But if you can say that you're going to get in 10 minutes today, then your expectations are low enough, they're manageable enough, and that guilt is eased. You did something. And so maybe just by having the lower expectations, that feeling of guilt isn't quite as strong. And so I don't want to use the word guilt, because our writing and our desire to write here is a gift. And I don't feel like it's a matter of, I feel like we've done, if you do something, that's great. Get a gold, give yourself a gold star. You know?
The reason I use guilt is because I think a lot of writers feel if they aren't getting words on the page every single day, then they're not really writers. And I know that's silly to think, because if you write, you're a writer. If you write 3 days out of the week, then you're writing. But I know some people, and I get this feeling sometimes too, that if I'm not getting words on the page every day, even if it's just a sentence or two, then I don't really want it. I don't really want to be a writer. And I know that's not true, but it's hard not to feel that way.
I think we need to be really careful with those type of blanket statements. And we don't, I don't know. There's a lot of ugliness that comes out of writers sometimes. Oh, you're not a real writer if you blah, blah, blah. You know, not a real writer if you did this, and the other. It's just dumb. when writers say that, what they're doing is they're showing how insecure they are.
Right. It's like when a writer writes a big blog post about, well, I write every single day. And if I,
good for you.
Exactly. You know, that's great for you. I don't do everything every single day. I don't go to my office every single day. You know, I don't, just because I don't do something every day doesn't mean I don't really want that thing, or I don't want to be a writer or anything like that.
No, that's, we got to be really careful. We're not bogged down by those type of things, because I don't think this is art. It's subjective. We're all so different, and our lives are so different. And I'm also a homeschooling mom. And so, boy, have I heard it from homeschoolers. You're not a real homeschooler unless you blah, blah, blah. My daughter was told at college, and that somebody met her and found out she was a homeschool kid. And they said, and then she had not seen the movie, The Quest for the Holy Grail, Monty Python. She hasn't seen it. All right. For whatever reason, she hasn't seen it. And this kid said to her, you're not a real homeschool mom or homeschool kid because you can't quote that movie. And she's like, I know. What? And so, but that's going to be my go-to thing. Every time I hear a writer say something, oh, well, you're not a real writer because you blah, blah, blah. I'm going to say, yeah, Holy Grail, homeschoolers. Like, it makes no sense. Whatever. And I told my daughter, because she kind of like is a little irritated because she's out in college and she's meeting all these different people. And to hear that kind of like stung her in a way that was new. And so I was like, you know what this does? This shows you how insecure he is. That's all it does. Because he's so wrapped up in his identity as a homeschool kid. And he's finding that it's not as great as it was. Once you're in college, it doesn't matter. And so he's trying to justify himself. And so he says these stupid things because he thinks it will justify himself. So when the writers come out and they say, I don't care how experienced they are or how many books they have with names in their self, if they tell you a real writer does this, a real writer wears black, a real writer smokes, a real writer has cats, a real writer drinks, right. You know, you fill in the blank. All that does is show the insecurity of this speaker.
You're a podcaster and blogger. You need an analytics and hosting platform that provides you with the right tools to make your job easier, so you can get back to doing what you do best, creating stuff. FeedPress is a delightfully intuitive RSS analytics and podcast hosting platform with accurate analytics for RSS feeds and email newsletters. Bloggers and podcasters can tap into RSS subscriber, geolocation, podcast download, and link tracking metrics, which come standard on all plans. In a matter of minutes, podcasters can create a feed and publish it to iTunes. Add your show notes, artwork, and drag and drop an MP3 into the editor to go live. Every podcast plan comes with 400 megabytes of file storage that's unmetered. This means you won't have to worry about running out of storage for long episodes, or getting dinged for a sudden spike in download traffic when your podcast becomes an overnight success. FeedPress offers an automatic feed burner migration tool, so you can make that transition with ease. Your feeds and subscriber data will be moved into your FeedPress account. And if you're currently hosting a podcast elsewhere, they can help you migrate your feeds and media files over so that your listeners don't notice you've changed anything. Support is responsive and available 7 days a week via email. Sign up today and try FeedPress on a 14-day commitment-free trial. Use promo code COVERED during checkout to get 10% off your first year.
Yeah, there was a tweet, I want to say a year or two ago, Neil Gaiman had tweeted that I don't know if it was an MFA program or someone was teaching a class, but he had tweeted, if you care about your writing, if you're serious about your writing, you want to take this class. And the way it was written, I know what he meant, and I wasn't thrilled with how he phrased it, but it sounded like if you don't take this class or if you don't go to this MFA program, then you don't really care about your writing. And he got a lot of flack for it because of the way he had phrased it. And I know Neil Gaiman is a thoughtful guy. He just phrased it the wrong way. But, you know, the fact that that was said, and from someone like him who's very influential, very successful, you know, it sends this message. Well, I guess I don't care about my writing because I can't go to this thing.
Yeah, it's just, no, we got to be really careful with that. And you know, this is what drives me crazy. This is one of my big writer pet peeves. We are communicators. You signed up to be a writer because you say that you are a good communicator, that you can communicate ideas, that you can communicate stories, that you can move people in emotional ways, that you know a little bit about craft and technical writing and that type of stuff. When you call yourself a writer, you're putting a lot, there's a lot to that. And if you are going to use these stupid arguments, like only real writers do blah, you're making yourself look like an idiot and you're damaging your own credibility. And so why would you as a good communicator want to do that? That's just idiotic. And so I have no patience with that. So just to counter that, this whole feeling of guilt, somebody has lied to you and told you that real writers look like this. And so the reason you're feeling this guilt is because of that particular lie. And so the only way to combat that is to, the only person you need to please is you. You know, what are you doing? Are you taking care of your family? Are you doing your job well? Are you, paying your bills? Are you doing the things that decent human beings should do as a member of society? And are you giving your art enough attention in light, balancing out the rest of your life so that you can sustain it? And maybe that's 10 minutes a day. Maybe that's only on weekends. You know, who cares? It's only about you and your needs. It's not about anybody else. And so, I don't know. I'm going to just tell you, Harry, stop feeling guilty.
Okay.
Just stop it.
Done. I am not feeling guilty anymore.
Okay.
One thing I do feel, and you talk about this in the book, you say this chapter is all about that. It's about gaining a realistic perspective on where our time goes, how we can better use it, and what boundaries we need to set up to protect it. What advice do you have for someone who works hard to make the people around them happy and has trouble saying no?
Well, I can't recommend this book enough. It's called Boundaries by Cloud and Townsend. Start there. If you have an issue saying no, read that book, and hopefully that will help you. It's about these psychologists that talk about, you know, why we need to set up boundaries. And and I have learned this from my own experience that if we're setting out to please people and keep particular member relationships happy all the time, we're going to lose ourselves in the process. And so you have to have, and a really good way to for self-care is to understand, this is what I will do, this is what I won't do. And building your own confidence in this and just saying no. In the course of the book, there are these exercises that help you evaluate where your time is going, so that you can help yourself understanding, you know, you, if this art is important to you, then make room for it and then protect it. But you have to make those decisions for yourself. And so, you know, we really have to understand boundaries. And, I one of the things that I've learned, my children have learned, at least I hope they've learned, in this whole business of being a 10-minute writer, is that there is a boundary. And then, and it took a long time for them to get it. And even sometimes they don't. But like when I was at my computer, which was happened to be in the kitchen in our old house, that when I was at the computer, they weren't supposed to bother me, even the little kids. And so, but when I stepped away from my computer, they could. And it was 10-minute time, you know, they don't need apple juice. They can wait 10 minutes. And so I was trying to teach them this boundary. Please respect my boundary. We will go through life in every area of our lives being asked to respect boundaries. We need to, if we can't, we need to respect them of others. We need to respect them of ourselves. And I really think there's a lot of happiness and joy in finding the, you know, understanding the boundaries, staying within them, and having the self-control to maintain them. You know, I want that with my, when they go off to college, I want my kids to understand that. You know, my daughter goes to a Christian school and they have some strict rules about visitation of the opposite sex. And she's like, hey, you know what? Those are good rules. They keep us out of trouble. I'm glad those rules are there because, and my friends, some of my friends don't like them, but boy, I'm glad they're there. And I was like, so she's understanding boundaries and she's seeing that this is a really good thing for young people. And so, you know, we talk about that a lot in my family. Like, hey, you know, maybe this restriction here, whatever it is, it's school or if it's your job or whatever, maybe it's a good thing. And so let's see how we can change our attitude toward it so we can find the joy in it. And then the more happier we are in it, the more others are going to see that and they're going to hopefully learn that what our boundaries are and respect them. I don't know if that answered your question or not.
It does. And, you know, boundaries are one part of it. And another part and a big part of the book is delegation. And, yeah. You know, as you say, you're a mother of five kids. You've got and they're older kids now. So, you know, they're self-sufficient. They can help you. They can help themselves. But what happens when you don't have kids who are older or kids at all? And, you know, maybe you're single, you work a long job, or you're married with a small child like I am. You know, how are you able to delegate what needs to get done around the house and everything so you can find that time to write, even if it is only 10 minutes?
Well, I mean, every family is different. Every situation is different. And you're going to have to gauge for yourself, can I sit down with reasonable requests to the people that are around me and say, how can we divide up the responsibilities fairly so that all of our, so we meet our objectives as a team. And this might not be something that's an easy thing to do, or it might be some, you know, you might have to have more than one conversation about this, you know, and especially in understanding what your standards are. What is acceptable? What isn't acceptable? It's not acceptable for us to go to bed with a sink full of dirty dishes. Okay, well, then somebody's going to wash them. Who's going to do it? And at what point, you know, being really honest with assuming responsibility or being honest with, you know, I'll take care of this part of it during this part of the day if you can handle it this part of the day. Because everybody has desires and goals. And I would think, I would hope, in an ideal situation, that every member of the party can meet those goals reasonably and still meet the objectives of the household or the office or whatever. If you're single, you don't really have anybody to do your work but yourself. So you can't, there's not a lot of delegating there. But you could also think about, is there ways to outsource your stuff? Is, you know, hiring your laundry done or paying someone to clean your house or teaming up with other people you know to eat together so the burden of cleanup and meal prep isn't always on you. I mean, there's ways to share responsibility so that you can maximize your time. It takes some creativity, it takes some work, and it certainly takes some very clear communication in order to get this done. So I think it's worth trying regardless of the situation because you need to we have to do, there's certain daily tasks that must be done. And so the best way to get, you can't get out of it you have to do laundry. So how can you do that most efficiently? And if you can do that with a team, or you can outsource it or something, then you've got more time to do the things you love.
So now that your kids are older and you are able to delegate that time, do you have more than 10 minutes a day to write?
Yeah. I thought I would. And I have a demand. I now they're older, and I'm beginning to see their academic strengths and weaknesses. I have higher expectations for them academically, and our homeschool life is taking up more time. And they have some more extracurricular activities that they didn't have when they were little. And so that's important. And so that's taking up more time than I thought. And I do a lot of driving. Nobody has a driver's license. And so if anybody's going to go anywhere, it has to be me taking them. And so that gets into my time. So I don't have any more time than I did when they were little, really. So I just have to go back to the things I wrote about. When I catch myself being frustrated with, man, I really want to write today, and I don't have the hour I wanted, and duh, 10 minutes is all I need. And so, like, okay. And I like, okay, this, or I'll make a long list. Like on Saturdays, I don't teach on Saturdays. So I have a long list of everything I want to be done by the end of the day. And I'll just go down the list, and each item on the list gets 10 minutes. And sometimes you can knock something out in 10 minutes. And sometimes it takes you all day to get the task done, like laundry, for example. And so that's fine. You can only wash a load at a time. So, you know, I just hit the thing going every time. And I just do the best I can one day at a time. And, and things are going to change. But I have an idea of like what I'm going to do. I only have like maybe 4 or 5 more years of homeschooling, and what's my life will change dramatically then, and my time will free up. And so, okay, what's that going to look like, and what can I do now to maximize that time then? And I'm still kind of playing with it, but you know, we'll see. And this is Christmas break, and all bits are off.
Ugh. Right. Oh man. Will they go back at the end of January?
My daughter who lives on campus, she goes next week, and then my daughter who commutes, she starts the week after. And then my son that does dual enrollment starts that week too. So, yeah.
So one day the nest will be empty and you'll have 20 minutes a day to focus on writing.
Exactly. So anyway, I'd like to have more short stories under my belt. I'd like to have a couple more books out by the time they leave the house so that I could be a little more established. And I was thinking about going back to school and getting an MFA. So yeah, I think I liked it. I think I'd like to be in a position to teach, and so well, I need an MFA to do that. So hey, that might be a good plan. So I think I need to have some things lined up though before I apply, and so that's what I'm working on now. Yeah,
I'd love to get an MFA, but yeah, you know, time is a factor. I work a lot. I work in New York City, and so I leave the house at like 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'm not home until 6 o'clock. So it's,
boy,
it's a long day. Yeah. And then money is also an issue, you know, to pay right. for tuition. I'm right. still paying student loans, and I'll probably yeah. be paying them until I'm 80.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's, I don't know how I'll pay for this MFA, but maybe I'll have a great book deal and
exactly.
And I'll be able to, yeah. And then maybe I won't need an MFA. I don't know.
Or the conference will just take off and it'll make millions.
You know, and I have been so surprised with the trajectory of my career in some things. Like, well, it could be anything. So, sure, let's do it.
Do you see online writing groups like 10-Minute Novelists as sufficient substitutes for people who may not be able to join a local in-person meeting?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because I think that everything that you need in a real-life group, you can find in our group. If you need a critique partner, you need beta readers, if you need just a hand to hold, you need good advice. And we've got, if you need resources like names of editors, if you want help with the query process, at every step in the way, there are people, I don't know all the answers, but I have so many people who do. And so we can point you in the right direction. I don't have a real life writing group. And I don't, it's one more thing for me to do.
You know? Yeah. And I don't have an hour in the day to focus. Like no. There are some that meet up in my area, but I get home so late. I got to cook dinner and clean up and get the kid to bed. I don't have the time to go and spend an hour or two with people and workshop pages. I wish I did. I just don't.
Right. And I don't, even that whole term, the idea of workshopping pages, you can get something like similar to that. It's basically receiving feedback. And because this is such a subjective thing we're asking for, I'm not convinced that a small group workshopping pages is always the best way to go, because you could have, you know, four people in your circle and none of them know what they're talking about.
Right. And that's one thing that sort of not weirded me out, but it was a hesitation about thinking of joining any writing group in town, is that, you know, maybe you have one person who writes romance, one person who writes literary fiction, one person who writes mysteries. And so you walk in with something that doesn't fit any of those. And because they don't know the genre, they don't know how to help you. And that's one thing I really appreciate about 10 Minute Novelists and Buddy Day, is that I can say, look, my book is about X, Y, and Z. If you know this and you know what I'm going for here, please get in touch and let's talk.
Yeah. And there's also this opportunity for trust. And if you walk into a circle, you've got to be vulnerable from the very first moment. And it doesn't always help. You know, you're going to find, or you walk into a place that's already been established for years and they already know, don't talk to her, she doesn't know what she's talking about. Or, you know, that one always wants a happy ending. You know, I think in our group, you can walk in slowly and you can establish relationships. And then you find out people that are connected to you or you've got something, things in common. And you start having these like benign conversations that could go into talking about your art, then you find out somebody that you could really be honest with, because this is such a hard thing to do. Open up and say, well, what do you think of this? And I think our people, generally speaking, you know, do a really good job of being helpful and not being hurtful. And so, you know, I think this is, you really don't necessarily need a real life group. You have to get out of the house, sure, but we can help you with that one. So,
as an excuse to shower at least once a week.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Well, I got to say, the 10 Minute Novelist is one of the few reasons I still even have a Facebook account.
That's great.
So, no, I'm a big fan. I love being a part of the group and seeing the discussions and participating and helping when I can and asking questions and knowing I'm going to get good answers from people. So it's been a great experience, and you've built something very wonderful for writers.
Well, thank you, Harry. It's really been a joy. I'm learning every day about something new too. So I'm hoping to have something I can share on Buddy Day in a few days. So,
Well, Catherine, thank you so much for coming on. This has been great.
Thanks, Harry. If there's anything else you need, just let me know. I love doing these. I love talking to people, podcasters. So I don't have to prepare anything, and I can just talk. And so if you ever need anything else,
yeah, I'm the one who has to prepare. All you have to do is answer questions, which I don't know. I don't know which is more difficult.
No, I like talking, so it's good. It's a win-win.
Where can people find you? Obviously, we'll put links to the Facebook group in the show notes. But you know, are you on Twitter or you know?
My I'm reluctantly on Twitter. I'm in and out of it, falling in and out of love with it, and I haven't had a lot of time. The best place is the Facebook group, 10 Minute Novelist. You can also go to the website, the 10minutenovelist.com. You can also go to 10mincon.com and find out information about our conference. And there's that. That's probably the best place to find me. So. You can do a search on Amazon and buy my books, too.
But. Excellent. Well, we're going to put everything in the show notes. This has been Covered with special guest Catherine Grubb. Links to Catherine's books and everything else discussed, 10 Minute Novelist, the Facebook group, the conference, it will all be available in our show notes and on our website at hologramradio.org/covered. You can follow me on Twitter at HCMarks and the show at Covered_FM. Thank you to TJ Cosgrove for our beautiful logo and Lorenzo Gudemi for all the hard work he puts into making this show sound fantastic. And as always, thank you again to Feed Press and Nox Sound Engineering for their support of this show. And remember, don't judge a book till it's covered.